Welcome to the Annie Jennings PR PokerCast interview series. My name is Annie Jennings, and I am your host today. You can visit our website at www.anniejenningsprpokercast.com. That's Annie Jennings PR PokerCast.com. Our poker pro guest today is blackjack expert John Bukowski, author of the book Blackjack, Play Like the Pros. John, welcome.
Hi, Annie. How you doing?
Wonderful. We're very happy to have you back. Your first podcast with us just was like hotcakes. We just had thousands of listeners, and everyone is very much waiting on the edge of their seats for our next session, which is going to be today's session when we're going to really get into card counting. So I know that we've talked in prior podcasts about many general things relating to card counting and the importance of learning the correct basic strategy, of course, which is the foundation on which all of card counting rests. But now, this comes the fun part, I think, for a lot of our listeners, is the actual science of card counting. So my first question to you, John Bukowski, is what exactly is card counting?
Annie, card counting is assigning a point value to each card in a standard deck and then simply keeping track of the cards as they are being dealt in order to learn about the content of the remaining cards. But card counting in a much broader sense is composed of what I like to call, and is what is generally recognized as basically five core concepts, and those are basic strategy, keeping a running count, converting that running count as the cards are being dealt to a true count, and then of course deviating from basic strategy when appropriate thanks to keeping track of that count,
mm-hmm.
betting the correct amount or otherwise known as implementing a correct betting strategy based on that information.
It's fascinating, and I know that we're going to cover a lot of wonderful information today and in future podcasts as well. So John Bukowski, one more time, author of Blackjack, Play Like the Pros. I encourage everyone to check it out at Annie Jennings PR, PokerCast.com. Just click on Poker Store and type in John Bukowski's name. That's B-U-K-O-S-S-K-Y. And there you go. You can order Blackjack, Play Like the Pros right now. Meanwhile, let's just keep talking about this. Now, we're talking about the actual process of keeping track of the cards, but before we get into that, card counting systems vary greatly in complexity. I know that you present two card counting methods in your book, and I want to ask you about the major differences between, for instance, a level 1 point count and a level 3 point count. And should the aspiring pro learn at a level 1 point count or the higher level point count? So I know that sounds complicated, but there you go. Should we start with level 1 or level 3, and what's the difference?
Well, there definitely are differences, but they aren't as large as one might imagine. As far as choosing which methodology is best for you, as I mentioned in my book, it's a good idea to, I think, assess your personality, your strengths, and your weaknesses. If you're good at multitasking and will be someone who knows they'll be playing a lot in the years that come, then go for a level 3. Go for, you know, the most advantageous of systems out there. A part-time player, however, who wants an advantage but puts a high value on ease in learning, certainly a level 1 will get you where you want to go. The vast majority of players probably would do fine by learning a level 1 point count, and for that reason, why don't we talk about how to go about doing that here?
Sure, absolutely, I agree. So we're going to start with learning about a level 1 point count today. And then, of course, we're going to move on to so many more issues relating to playing winning blackjack. We're going to talk about all the issues that John mentioned earlier, such as keeping a running count, converting the running count into a true count, deviating from basic strategy. And that's kind of that sounds similar to me like knowing when to hold them and when to fold them, right?
All right.
Yeah, we can get to that later. So each card has a value. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the value of the cards actually are?
Well, the high low will be the level 1 I'll talk about, and it is the most popular of all level 1 point counts. And the cards are valued as follows. The 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are all valued at plus 1. Since their removal from the cards that remain are good for the player. cards 7, 8, and 9 are neutral, or you would assign a 0 to them. And cards, all 10 value cards and aces are assigned a minus 1.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, even though that initially sounded simple, we're dealing with a plus 1, a 0, and a minus 1, I know it does get complicated because I've actually tried it. So here we go. What's the best way to practice learning to count these cards?
Great question. The first thing I guess an aspiring player should do is take a deck of cards and just run through them, first reciting aloud the value of each card. And I mean the point count value, not, you know, you wouldn't recite a 3 for a 3. You would recite a plus 1 for a 3. And a 0 for a 7, and a minus 1 for a king, as an example. After a few run-throughs of the values, either minus 1, 0, or 1 should become apparent rather quickly. The next step is keep a cumulative total. For instance, instead of reciting a plus 1 for a 5, and a 0 for a 9, and a minus 1 for an ace, keep a running tally or a running count. So for a 3 followed by, let's say, another 3, followed by a 9, followed by a 2, followed by a 3, or 3 10 value cards, let's say, the counter would recite the following for the above: plus 1, plus 2, plus 2, plus 3, plus 2, plus 1, and 0. We tracked the cumulative total for the 7 cards dealt, and that is known as keeping a running count.
Now, it's interesting because initially, when we first presented this information, the plus 1 and the 0 and the minus 1, that seemed counterintuitive because the 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are valued at plus 1 since the removal of these cards from the removal from the cards that remain are good for the player. Since there were these since these cards are no longer part of the deck, right? That
exactly.
Means it's good for the player.
Right, and that's keeping in mind that low cards that are removed from play benefit the player later on. So you're right on. It's sort of counterintuitive.
And that's where you get the plus, because that means it's going to be in your favor.
Exactly, going forward.
Right, it really should be minus. But see, I don't want to confuse everybody now. But
no,
you understand
what I'm
saying.
But minus, again, think of it this way. If nothing but low cards came out, you know high cards are coming, and that's good for the player. That's a real positive.
So that's the positive is meaning it's for you. So while we're not talking a positive or negative for the deck, we're talking about the positive or negative for the player.
Exactly.
Am I right? So if you have something like a plus 5, that means you're sitting pretty.
Yes.
For getting high cards.
We're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
I know, sorry. I'm a fast learner.
No. A good question. A plus 5 early on in a 6-deck shoe with a running count of, say, plus 5 has different meaning than a plus 5 late in that same.
All right. And I know we're definitely going to get to that. The way to evaluate the running count based on where you are in the shoe. So we can save that for a little bit because you were just about to tell us a little bit about the running count again, and you were going to mention that
expediting the learning.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and we all know things at the tables or in the casinos tend to happen very fast, especially for a newbie or anyone just starting out. The aspiring counter should learn to make, you know, combinations out of two or more cards whenever possible. In other words, all those two-card combos that sum to 0 can be really glazed over in order to become quicker and quicker at counting down a deck. As you practice, try to begin, you know, grouping cards whenever possible, whether the grouping is two cards that cancel each other out, or the two total of two, let's say. But in other words, you don't have to, if you know plus two threes come out in a row, you know, just add it as plus two.
And why don't you give us some example of the canceling strategy you just mentioned, such as what if a 4 and a 10 come out?
Exactly. You simply ride over that
without
even wasting the time to add the two together.
Why waste your mental energy? Just cancel them out and just move on from there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what should an aspiring counter strive for in terms of, I don't know, proficiency when practicing? Among the pros, it's generally acceptable to be in in sort of battle ready form if you can count down a full deck in about 25 seconds or less.
Right.
And that's being accurate 99.9% of the time, by the way. And by being accurate, I mean ending with a count of zero, as you are using a balanced count. The high-low is a balanced count because the sum of all cards, positive and negative, will sum to zero. However, it is very important to stress that speed should not come as a result in loss of accuracy. Speed should not come as a result, or you shouldn't base...
Accuracy is a lot more important than speed, although speed's important, too.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The player should concentrate in the beginning on being very accurate
first
time.
Yeah, it's just like in anything. You know, initially you perfect the movement, right? And then speed comes later once you perfect the movement.
Exactly.
So the movement in this case is the actual counting strategy. And then, of course, later on when you really have that down, you'll be able to whip through the deck, most likely.
And that's practice. Day, practice, night.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and you mentioned that you can just about practice anywhere, and I find it odd, I find it funny that you say, there's one place though where you shouldn't be practicing, and where is that, John?
When you're driving.
When you're driving. No card counting when you're driving, guys.
You don't want a cop to pull you over, and your explanation was you weren't looking at the road because you were, you know, trying to keep track or count down a deck of cards. No.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
That's funny. So that's a good idea. So lots of practice, and, you know, just start with the basics and getting it right, and don't be too hard on yourself, because eventually people do master the art of card counting, right?
That's exactly right.
Good, good. That's good to know. Now, we know that card counting puts a lot of emphasis on what cards remain, and I know that the running count isn't the end of the process, because
right.
I know that the same running count early on in a six deck shoe means something very different than that same count very late in the shoe. So what comes next? What does the process do to factor in the amount of the cards that remain?
Great question. And, you know, we alluded to that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And this leads us to the next really part, the next segment, if you will, of learning the whole methodology. The meat and potatoes of the entire process rests on converting that running count we just talked about to what's called a true count. The true count takes into account exactly that, how many cards remain. And interestingly, we, in a way, work backwards to determine how many cards remain by eyeballing the discard pile located on the table to the dealer's extreme right. The true count is obtained by dividing the running count by the number of decks remaining. And as far as precision is concerned, we estimate to the nearest half deck, again by estimating from the discard pile. For instance, in a six-deck game, a running count of plus 24, let's say with four decks remaining, equates to a true count of positive 6. 24 divided by 4 equals 6. Whereas a running count of plus 24, this time, let's say with only 2.5 decks remaining, equates to a true count of a little under 10, and that's gotten by dividing 24 by 2.5 mm-hmm. for 2.5 decks, which equals about 10, 9.6 to be exact. So just as you implied earlier, Annie, during your question, running counts convert to a different true count depending on how many decks remain.
Wow. We're going to have to listen to that one over again. That was very, very good. But since this is a podcast, people can listen again, which is one of the benefits.
Exactly.
So that's wonderful. So I got a question for you. You mentioned you're estimating on how many decks remain by a glance at the discard pile, but how do you really get to know what, you know, how have you learned the art of the estimation of how many decks remain just by looking at a pile of cards?
Well, practice, again, not surprisingly, and, you know, we glance at the discard pile and really work backwards from there. If we're at a six-deck game and two decks are sitting in the discard pile, then we know that about four decks remain in the shoe. And really, the only way to become proficient at eyeballing the discard pile is, and this probably comes as no surprise, or
mm-hmm.
any surprise anyone, is to buy a whole bunch of decks and set them up in half-deck increments.
Mm-hmm.
So And then really just practice converting from there. That's how the pros do it. It has to be practiced ahead of time. And again, by practicing, that means securing a bunch of decks and simulating various discard pile heights, and then running through various running count conversions, and converting your running count to the true count. You have to practice that. There's really no other way to get around it. And you just simply buy a whole bunch of decks and set them up in half deck increments.
Well, sounds exciting, actually.
Yeah, this is the meat and potatoes of the entire process
here.
This is what distinguishes the pro-level player from everyone else.
Wow. It's amazing. I didn't realize all this was actually going on, you know, behind the scenes when I'm at the casinos.
Yep, and while people are blowing smoke in your face and you're getting bumped in the back and they're dropping drinks on the tables and, you know, in the MIT Blackjack movie, which will be coming out, I think, in 2008.
I got the book, by the way. It was really amazing.
It is.
I think it was called Bringing Down the House.
That's exactly right. And part of the training that those guys went through, and which actually entailed all the distractions that a player must, you know, deal with while doing these calculations.
Right. It's amazing. Yeah, it's very challenging, I'm sure. But it's, I guess after a while, it's like everything else. If it's your business, you get to know your business, and you get to be a pro.
That's right. That's exactly right.
All right, so I guess the big question is, we really want to know, now that we've done our homework and learned the basics, and let's assume we become very strong in understanding some of the basics that we've presented here today. So where does all this calculating the true count bring us? What is the advantage now?
Calculating the true allows us to adhere to a predetermined betting strategy. If you remember, betting strategy was that last of the five core concepts. Which, by the way, betting strategy is a topic in and of itself for a future podcast, if
absolutely.
You want in this series.
Absolutely, definitely, and when to deviate from basic strategy. I know that's going to be a good one.
You're definitely doing your homework, that's right. And as well, it allows us to deviate when appropriate, both of which are critical elements to implementing a sound card counting system. Correct betting and playing strategies based on the true count, like I said, what separates the pro from the general, you know, blackjack playing population, who uses simply a basic strategy and nothing more.
Right, I see. All right, so how about we summarize a little bit for our wonderful listeners?
Great idea. A would be practice learning the value of each card in a standard deck. B would be practice keeping a cumulative total run through that deck time and time again, where you're actually reciting a cumulative total for each card dealt. C would be practice grouping cards together to increase speed, but as you brought up, don't sacrifice accuracy in any way, shape, or form. D would be practice estimating how many decks are in the discard pile by getting a whole lot of fresh, new cards. And they have to be fresh and new, because that's the kind of cards the casino uses in live play. If you have old, rumpled decks that stand 6 inches high, that's not a good thing to use. And create half-deck increments from a half-deck up through 6 or even 8 decks, and then convert. Start converting your running to a true as the last part of learning that core process. And that basically comprises, you know, makes up card counting 101 right there.
Well, that's wonderful. And I know, let's talk a little bit about what's going to come next. But before we do that in future podcasts, is everything you've talked about today and more included in Blackjack Play Like the Pros, your book, A Complete Guide to Blackjack, including card counting?
Yes. In fact, I outline the level 1 we talked about today. I also outline a level 3.
I see that. Yeah, I see that here. And you also talk about deviations from basic strategy. So if people want to jump the gun and not wait for the next podcast, which will be out shortly, by the way, you can always pick up a copy of Blackjack Play Like the Pros. You can get that on our website, which is www.anniejenningsprpokercast.com, and just click on the poker store and put John's name in the search button. That's John, J-O-H-N, Bukowski, B-U-K-O-F-S-K-Y, and look for Blackjack Play Like the Pros, and you can be way ahead of us for next time. Right?
The student that does his homework ahead of time, that's a good student.
We like those. Well, it's fun. It's just fun. I think it will add a lot of pleasure to the game, you know, in that you just feel maybe just, you know, so it's just more fun. I would think it would be more fun to play using a bit of a strategy, don't you think? Because as I was talking to you earlier, John, I said, well, otherwise, isn't it sort of like, well, do I just feel lucky right now? You know?
Annie, it's you're taking the luck element, I think, if you're a serious player, like most poker players are, you know, luck, you know, only goes so far, and everyone has an equal amount of it from time to time, and it's just as poker players tend to be the new breed of player that likes to, you know, learn a game and get good at it.
Right, right, that's right.
That's one of those games that offers the serious player a chance to actually gain an advantage over the house.
See, they, right, people appreciate a strategy. I mean, you see it everywhere, you know. We all love strategic play. We love knowing a strategy. It's just, it's a sort of a, it's a mind game. It's a mental workout, and people do like having that. I have a question for you, John, though, but because I know there's a lot of controversy over card counting. How do we card count but still stay on the, you know, on this side of the, on the friendship side of the casino? Let's put it that way. So how do we implement the strategy that you present without angering the casino? I mean, shouldn't we be allowed to use strategy?
Yes.
That's the part I don't understand. I mean, if a strategy exists, why not be allowed to use it? And how do we use the strategy without turning into, you know, in the dark side? We don't want to get there. We really want to have a good time. We want to be able to play the game, enjoy ourselves, and maybe take home a few winnings every now and then. But so how do we do that? Use a strategy, but
it's all
without
about
breaking the law,
and using camouflage, believe it or not. And I think most people may be surprised to hear this, though, that the pro-level card counter actually goes through, and this would certainly be a whole other podcast topic in and of itself as well, but camouflage enters the picture. Believe it or not, after you learn the mechanics of actually, you know, card counting, that whole cat-and-mouse game is what becomes prominent. The ability to keep playing and not get barred, backed off, or have a procedural change affect your ability to play and win.
Nobody really wants that. I mean, nobody's out there to break any laws or commit any crimes. We just want to have fun playing the game.
Right. Well, we do, and we want to make money too. But yeah, that's you're starting to get into the gray area.
Right.
In Las Vegas, and this is where the legal aspects of the casinos of Las Vegas are actually private clubs.
Right, right.
So, and I know we touched on this, I think, in one of the three earlier podcasts that have the right to actually pick and choose their members. And by that, I mean they have the right to not deal to somebody. And what happens in an area like Las Vegas, if the casinos, who are a business, just like any other business, figure out that, let's say, you know, player number three at table number five can actually beat them, then they can take action and actually prevent that player from playing, and that's barring is one of the options they can take.
I know.
And their business is like any other business, but that's the age-old argument between the pro-level player and the casinos in a place like Nevada. The card counters, you know, we say we're not making, you know, you guys are making millions and millions of dollars a year, and the amount of money siphoned off the top by pro-level players isn't, you know, great enough for you guys to put up such a, to actually bar you from play. But, you know, it's a business like any other business, they contend, and so they can, you know, by law, make it a private club and then ask you to leave. That's kind of the loophole.
But wouldn't you say most people who... I know Blackjack, and they love playing the game. They love it, love it, love it. So wouldn't they be using some sort of strategy, though? I mean, you just can't sit down like I would sit down and say, well, do I feel lucky or not? Because really, that's how I would play the game, if I felt lucky at that particular moment. But aren't most of the real players, and you know there's a lot of the hardcore players, they love it. They'll sit there for hours, they'll play, they'll really have a great time. Aren't they using more of a strategy than if they just happen to get a feeling, or, you know, if they just feel generally I should hit or stay based on what the cards show?
Most players you'll find use basic strategy to a large degree. Most players probably don't know 100% of mm-hmm. basic strategy, but as you play at the upper tables, like the say the $25 or the $100 or the $50 tables, you see basic strategy played pretty well. These are people that have more money on the table, and
right.
I realize that the computer simulations or combinatorial analysis that have been done, you know, reveal the correct way to play each hand, and so they abide by that. At the lower limit tables, you'll find more of the,
guessing, more of the guessers.
There, yeah, and, mm-hmm. and that's where you see straying from basic strategy. What I'm surprised at, though, is that more people don't learn to keep track of the cards, honestly. I think if you're going to play, why not take on the challenge of actually, you know, garnering an advantage over the house instead of having the house have an advantage over you?
Yeah, it's, of course, it's an interesting discussion, and I'm very curious about what we're going to be discussing in our future podcast. So what's up? What do you got in store for us down the road?
Oh, I think one on deviations from basic strategy, one on betting strategy, one mm-hmm. on, I think, one on camouflage and longevity might not be a bad idea.
Sure.
Countermeasures, what to expect. The casinos, what you know, how they can bar and back you off and mm-hmm. change the rules. The negative swings is a chapter in my book which talks about the normal statistical fluctuations you may expect to encounter.
That's
even
interesting.
At a percent and a half advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that I think would make for nice topics to discuss in future podcasts.
So, you know, I wanted to ask you a question about what do you feel the future is? I know we spoke about that poker becomes, I mean, all kinds of cards, I mean, poker, blackjack, you name it. Just people seem to be flocking to the sport. They actually are using the word sport instead of gambling.
But they should flock to the bookstores, I hope, too.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Of course.
No, I hear you. It's you're right. It's taking on... It's almost got a life of its own now. It's amazing.
I know. Yeah. What's the appeal? What do you think, John? You've been in the industry for a while. You've seen a lot. What do you think the appeal is? And just the tremendous interest in blackjack and no limit and any other casino game these days. It just seems like it is skyrocketing.
It has become a widely accepted form of entertainment. Years ago, casinos weren't that, I think. But now, I think people at night, on a Saturday night, if they're within, you know, driving distance
mm-hmm.
of the casino, they say, do you want to go to the movies tonight? Do you want to go to the casino?
Or you want to go to the casino? I know, it sounds a lot more fun going to the casino.
Here you go. That second sentence or question wasn't even a reality, you know?
And yeah. It's a nice release. It's kind of fun. You know, we all put in hard weeks of work. We're all working hard. We've got, because there's a lot of responsibility in our daily lives, and I guess going to a casino is just fun, a great experience.
Yeah, of course, you're bordering on that top, you know, as long as you don't let it get the best of you. I mean, if you're a negative expectation player and you're losing money consistently
right.
over time, you know, then you have to value the entertainment of it.
Yeah, you have to watch that whole gambling addict problem, you know, that can
right.
rear its ugly head, and that's probably another podcast, too, where we talk about some signs that perhaps maybe you need to chill out a little bit, but we'll say this
for
later.
Emotions run high at the tables, and you know, you see people in casinos, sometimes you think maybe they shouldn't be in casinos, and then there are others who you know handle it well, and
mm-hmm.
there's a bunch of us who get barred in Las Vegas.
Well, everything in moderation, that's something
I
learned.
I mean, if we're getting barred, then it's a reality that we're beating them, so.
Yeah, and here in Atlantic City, I mean, that's in New Jersey, I understand that the casinos don't bar. You're not barred from the Atlantic City casinos, is that correct?
There are some actually in Atlantic City that they get to know card counters by face, and what they do in Atlantic City is they'll either what's called half shoe a pro level player who is known to them as somebody that can beat them, and they'll limit the bets that the person is able to make.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does effectively is it takes away, you know, don't forget, when we get to the betting strategy podcast, in order to actually make all this math we talked about earlier, in order to capitalize on knowing when a deck is, you know, advantageous to the player or not, the player has to bet more, obviously, in winning situations. And that's called the betting spread,
mm-hmm.
I guess, is the term used.
Right.
If you're not spreading, as they say, from, you know, at least 10 to 1, let's say, in a multi-deck game, in other words, if you're not betting 25 to 250 or 10 to 100 or 5 to 50 or 100 to 1,000, if you're not betting 10 to 1 when the deck gets favorable, or when the shoe gets favorable, I should say, you're not going to make money. You have to, conversationally, I guess, you have
mm-hmm.
to put it out there, so to speak, when it's advantageous. And they actually, in Atlantic City, for instance, take away your ability to, quote, put it out
mm-hmm.
there. And if you
right.
can't spread 10 to 1, you're not going to make money. So they, in effect,
right.
have done the same thing as barring you.
Right, exactly. I see. I have a feeling that this is also a lot like intuition. I mean, even though card counting is now the scientific name, the strategic name for knowing when a deck is favorable or unfavorable, but I would think that people, just because of their natural intelligence and understanding how the game works, and there's a limited amount of cards, and there's only so many low cards and so many high cards, I think intuitively people can really, you know, learn how to play the game anyway.
Yeah, that's, I think it would take somebody a long, long time. There are some decisions that are so close to even that I'm not sure that anyone without
mm-hmm.
computer information or information
mm-hmm.
that they've learned in a book that has
yeah.
done, like in my book, I ran sims to actually figure out the best way to play each hand, but any published basic strategy in any reputable book will tell you the best way to play each hand, and
mm-hmm.
that's, again, the foundation, and then you go from
right.
there.
And
so
from
intuitiveness,
there.
I guess, at times is important, but the foundation we always go back to is basic strategy.
Right, exactly. Thanks, Don, for a wonderful interview today. You've been wonderful, and we're so thankful that you've been able to share your information and your skill set with us. Just as a reminder to our listeners, John Bukowski is the author of Blackjack, Play Like the Pros, a complete guide to blackjack, including card counting. Of course, you all can get a copy of the book at AnnieJenningsPRPokerCast.com, and just go to our poker store, and there you go. You should be able to search for John Bukowski and pick up a copy of Blackjack, Play Like the Pros. And with that said, I want to thank John very much for being with us, and hopefully we'll be welcoming him back shortly.
Thanks, Annie.
My pleasure. I'll talk again.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.